The seventh edition of the Four Corners Podcast starts right now. This is Carolina basketball.
Black holding high, goes to Darty. Darty in the double team, gives it back to Black with 20 seconds left to play. Goes back to Michael Jordan, jumper from out on the left, good!
Michigan out of timeout. And Weber, front court, Carolina thought he'd travel with it. Weber, front court, Carolina with foul. He takes the timeout, they're out of timeout. Technical foul, technical foul on Michigan.
Now gets it away to Donald Williams, down the side to Stockout. Stockout streaking in on Park, reverse dunk is good, and he gets fouled by Park. Oh my goodness, what a dunk.
Brown gets it into Williams. Here comes Williams, front court. Williams on the drive. Gets it back out to him. Long outside shot. Short rebounded. May! It's over! Carolina has won the national championship!
Felton ready on his second attempt.
That one is no good. They battle for it. Loose ball. Recovered Marvin. He scores! 17 seconds left. 89-72. And how about them Tar Heels? They are the national champion.
Matthews off the mark, and this year the confetti is going to fall for North Carolina. They're not going to be denied this time.
From HeelToughBlog.com, this is the Four Corners Podcast featuring your host, Josh Marlowe. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Four Corners Podcast. We are powered by Carolina Electrical Services. We have not gone anywhere. We have just been simply waiting on some Carolina basketball news to come about for us to talk about, as we've been well into the offseason now for roughly 2.5, going on 3 months. And so that's why we are back today to talk about Carolina basketball. We got some recruiting news. A legendary coach on Tobacco Road is entering retirement. Roy Williams gets another, acclamation or another honoree as he's been well into his retirement. Before we get to all of that great stuff, I have teased you guys about about an announcement about the podcast on the Twitter and the Facebook pages.
We got a new host.
No.
Damn it.
No. Haven't found one of those yet. They have not replied to the numerous job applications I have posted on Indeed, LinkedIn. I've gone broke actually searching for someone to replace you. What the results are just saying, you do too good of a job to be replaced.
There we go.
So you have to stick on here and talk about the Tar Heels. But as I mentioned, I've been teasing an announcement. Now I can officially announce it. The Four Corners Podcast has joined the Basketball Podcast Network as the only UNC basketball podcast on the network. And this has been in motion for about 3 weeks or roughly a month. I got a DM one day from the guy who heads up the podcast network over there, Brandon Ruwicki is his name. He lives up in Canada. Did a lot of hockey coverage for TSN up there. As Carolina is a national brand, if he had a college basketball team, his team would be the Tar Heels. And after going through numerous Carolina basketball podcasts, he selected us as the one to join the network that they're building there on the basketball side of things. They also have a hockey podcast network. In the future, there'll be a football podcast network and a baseball podcast network as well. And this really wouldn't have been possible without all you guys that have been staying with the show. We're now going into our fourth full season. We've got 3 full seasons in the books, and this wouldn't be possible without you guys that have been loyal subscribers, that have commented. All things we ask you to do at the end of the show has allowed this to happen. We are on a network, and it's you know, for us, it's good recognition. It's good publicity for the podcast, our blog, the Heel Tough Blog, what it means moving forward for us. It's really nothing major. We're going to be doing what we've been doing all along. I don't have to change anything what I'm doing. You will hear some ads throughout the podcast that's part of radio. That's a part of the podcasting industry.
Dude, you get the sultry live reads.
That's right. And so But this all comes back to you guys. Thank you for everything you've done. Hopefully you'll stick with us as we transition into being on a network. And as I mentioned, nothing's going to change. We're still going to bring you great content, great opinion, great interviews. As we talk about Carolina basketball, as we enter a new era of Carolina basketball, as Hubert Davis has taken over for the now retired Roy Williams. And, you know, we'll jump into the nitty-gritty of the basketball stuff. And, look, this is a really big month for Carolina basketball, even though they're not playing any games. The recruiting dead period came to an end as of June 1st at midnight, meaning that schools and players and all this stuff could take and host official visits. This hasn't happened for basketball. This, when we had the first person on campus, Will Shaver, back on June 1st, he became the first on-campus visit since November of 2019, when Donovan Puff Johnson visited Chapel Hill and ultimately committed to the Tar Heels. The COVID pandemic, as we all know, last year really shut down the sports world. It shut down really the entire world. And for those of us that are, for recruiting, it brought recruiting to a dead halt. Coaches had to adapt the way they recruit. Zoom became a popular way for coaches to meet and talk to players. Now we get the chance to get these guys that we've offered scholarships on our campus. And I made a statement in the article I wrote on the website for theheeltoughblog.com. This is arguably a top three recruiting stretch in Carolina basketball history, because you're transitioning from one head coach to another. You're transitioning a whole philosophy in the way that you want to play, because Carolina is not going to look the same on the floor next year as they've had the last 18 years under Roy Williams. And it's just really important for Hubert Davis to set himself up and the program up for success on the recruiting trail. And I believe he's done that. As I mentioned, Will Shaver was the first guy that visited campus. He was the first guy on campus back on June 1st. Before he left Chapel Hill, he committed to Carolina. And I think that just really proves what everything has been said about Hubert Davis since he got the job. He knows he's a good people person. He knows how to relate to kids. He's going to, you know, everyone said he's going to thrive in the recruiting role as the head coach, because he was the lead recruiter for Roy Williams the last handful of seasons he was on Roy Williams' staff. And he's been really busy since he became the head coach, offering a lot of guys, but hasn't had a lot of chance to talk to them, let alone meet them. He gets Shaver on campus, and he gets him to commit before he leaves Chapel Hill. And Shaver's a guy, 6'9", 245-pound center from Birmingham, Alabama. He's a three-star player. We'll touch on this in a minute, because as always with Carolina basketball, if we're not recruiting five stars, there's a problem. Shaver is a guy that Hubert Davis and Carolina needs right now. And he's a guy that, barring him blossoming or taking, you know, his game really developing in the next year and a half or so, he's a stability 3 to 4 year player. And you look at Carolina's front court this offseason, you lost four guys to the transfer portal, one guy off to the NBA in De'Ron Sharp, Armando Bacot coming back for his junior season. Him, Brady Manick, and if you want to consider Justin McCoy a stretch four, those three guys make up the front court for Carolina. This was a program that last year could roll four or five when they were fully healthy, six deep with front court players. That's no longer there. And so the big thing in the recruiting month for Carolina is you want to get the one-and-done talent, because I think we can both admit that Carolina needs to upgrade the talent on the roster in certain areas. But what he really needs is roster stability, knowing how he can recruit guys moving forward. And Shaver allows him to do that, as I mentioned, unless something happens with this guy. Look, development can happen, and he can become a one-and-done prospect. He can become a two-year guy. This guy figures to be a three, most likely a four-year player. So, Anthony, your thoughts on Carolina landing their first commit under Hubert Davis, and then the fan reaction, which on your end you saw was pretty negative.
I guess I'm just going to start with that, because, I mean, I can't believe that we have to do this again. Just come on here and once again talk the fan base off of a ledge after landing a recruit. I mean, it's truly unbelievable. And I'm going to go back to what I go back to, or what I've gone back to recently, multiple times on this podcast here over the last couple of months when we've talked about some of these guys. I mean, remember, they were saying the same thing about Jonas Adu. Well, you know, we kind of want him, but he's only a 4-star. Is he really that good? Then they miss on him, and it's like, well, start the car, run me over in the driveway because it's all over. It's all downhill from here. Like, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. There's clearly something that this staff saw in him, whether it's that he just fits that well, whether it's that they see him as a developmental guy that'll be there 3 to 4 years, which is what they're looking for right now. There is some aspect that they saw from him and said, okay, this is what we need on this team right now. I'm not going to butcher him for landing this guy. And yeah, he's a 3-star, but again, when it comes to recruiting rankings, first of all, take them with a grain of salt to begin with because, yeah, remember who else was rated outside of the top 100 prospects in the country and played a big role on this team last year? Kerwin Walton played a big role as a freshman too. But especially this year, you have to remember that not only have the coaches not been able to go out, get looks at these guys in person, you've got scouts and the guys that work for 24/7 Sports, that work for Rivals.com. They don't get to see these guys play right now. They haven't been able to go to not only their high school games, they have not seen them play AAU games in person. And for the most part, and I don't get this mindset because I think even with basketball, it's definitely a lot easier than with football. Football, I understand it a little bit just from watching some games myself this year that it is tougher to scout certain positions on camera. But with basketball, and maybe I'm wrong about this, you would feel that that game would be easier to scout on a computer and be able to give a star rating out, but it's still not the same. So that's why
I think the thing is like, and look, you know, we're broadcasters. We work, you know, we've done high school games. You get a better sense of a player's feel for the game, their athleticism, what they can do, whether it's on the football field or on the basketball court, if you're seeing it with your own eyes. The camera still shows you it. You're still seeing what that guy can do.
Right.
But you can't.
You can't see every movement, well, typically. I mean, your eyes aren't drawn.
You also can't. You can't feel it. You know what, yeah, I'm saying? Like, when we saw Ty Washington at the bash down at Columbia, you could feel why that guy was a 4-star.
I didn't get why he was a 4-star. Yeah. I thought he was a 5-star. And he improved. I think he may have become a 5-star. Where did he land? He landed somewhere.
He's in Kentucky.
Bigger. Kentucky, that's right. Yeah.
And so I think that's the thing, and I'm glad you brought that up. The recruiting this year and scouting this year, it is different because these guys that are reputable scouts and know the game better than you and I, they're going off of film they saw that probably was shoddy, with shoddy shots, probably wasn't great.
Well, they haven't. Most of them haven't updated it. So yeah. Most of these rankings are from their pre-junior year. So, I mean, you're thinking like, look, man, how good could Shaver actually be if we're seeing these rankings? Well, this kid has played a lot more since then. He's been able to build his body since then. He's probably been able to change his game a little bit since then. So the guy that you're seeing that star rating from is probably not the same player that if you threw the film on or you go and watch him whenever everything opens back up and you can go see him play, it's probably not the same kid. And that's why from what I've seen, most of the people believe that the experts are going to have him rated as a 4-star when they eventually get another shot to look at him. Now, look, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen, but I mean, look, if he gets inside of the top 100, I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned now. Yeah. I still think that there's a chance he could turn out to be a really good player because I'm not putting everything on star rating. But, I mean, if you're one of those people that's looking at that and that's one of the big things that you look for in your prospects, I'm telling you, he is going to eventually go up and come up and become a 4-star. He'll probably – I think I would be shocked from the way that they're talking, and this is just from some of the people that I've seen that are closer to some of these people that follow these guys closely. I would say he's probably going to be like a top 80 guy, maybe somewhere around top 60. But it really just depends. I'm looking at his – I threw on his highlights while we're sitting here. And, I mean, look, he's not a demeaning presence by any means. I mean, he's not huge, but he's athletic. He can stretch the floor. And, I mean, he's got some rim protection ability on the inside. So, I mean, there's definitely some things to like about his game. And the other thing that is key about this commitment,
this is not going to be their headliner in this class. Like, if you think that this is their guy that they're going to headline and it's all downhill from here, they're going to surround him with other pieces that are less talented than him, I don't know what to tell you. This is one of those guys that's a first piece. There'll be other guys in this class that are going to be more highly rated that'll probably be able to make earlier impacts. But again, and you know, we've seen it on the basketball front recently, and you see it all the time on the football front. You just never know when a guy gets to campus, when he gets into a system, how he's going to fit. He could be a guy that comes in as a three-star, but he fits everything that Carolina wants to do. He's putting in all the effort, and all of a sudden, who's he turning into? Luke May.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You know, one of the things I broke down in his commitment article is if you want to get a good look at what he could bring to Chapel Hill, that guy's on your roster, and that guy's Armando Bacot. And I got some people that were kind of questioning me, saying, well, how do you figure? Armando Bacot's been challenged by Hubert Davis and the staff to make 1,000 threes a day as a part of his off-season training. And this one guy told me, wasn't that physically impossible? Because you have to make one like every 3 seconds. Well, if Armando Bacot really wants to go to the NBA and wants to be a professional basketball player, his off-season isn't about going out on the town having fun. It's being getting his butt in the gym and working on his game. And the goal is to have Armando Bacot as a stretch five even more help spread the floor, so these guards that you got on the roster right now, which we all believe are at their best when they're getting to the basket and they're playing downhill as opposed to playing on the perimeter, they have more driving lanes to get to the rim and make plays. And that's the end goal for Will Shaver. Is I think, you know, rebounding, it's part of that. If Carolina can't rebound, then he won't be a stretch five player. He won't play. Because as much as Hubert Davis wants to spread the floor and have great perimeter shooting, this game comes back down to rebounding. If they can't rebound, they won't play the way that he wants to play. But the ultimate goal is to have Shaver as a stretch five, making threes, but also holding his own, getting good, you know, getting good rebounds, getting good box outs, playing good defense. Could maybe look at a guy like we saw in the NCAA tournament this year, Tanner Groves from Eastern Washington. He gave Kansas fits. He dropped over 30 points. You can get that kind of production out of it. I'm not saying you want to get 30 points out of this guy on a semi-nightly basis, but what he did for that team in terms of opening the floor is what you're looking at. Overall, though, Carolina is going to have 7 or 8 recruits that will visit Chapel Hill. Shaver wasn't the first guy that visited within the first week. They also hosted 5-star prospect Jalen Washington on Friday. He did not commit to Carolina, but he left rather impressed. And I think that's been the theme about the first week of having recruits on campus, is the feeling of family, being at home. That hasn't changed from Roy Williams to Hubert Davis. If more so, it's probably upped a little bit, because every time you see Hubert Davis, like when we welcomed Brady Manick and Justin McCoy to campus, big smile on his face, big hug. And when he talks about serving kids or coaching kids, he calls it missionary work. You know, he's at service of them. He's making these guys feel welcome. And I, you know, Washington's a guy from Gary, Indiana. He's got a lot of Big Ten schools in his recruitment, as you could expect. But he's a guy that, as you mentioned, Shaver isn't your headliner. But if Jalen Washington commits, there's your 5-star prospect that plays on the wing. He's the potential headliner to your class. The other guy that was on campus this weekend, 4-star wing Justin Taylor. And this is a guy that is going to be heavily coveted by this recruiting staff. He's even made it known that since Hubert Davis took over, he has been just as much a priority for Hubert Davis and his new staff as he was under Roy Williams's. And, you know, I mentioned that this month the recruiting allows Hubert Davis the chance to build some momentum within his program. On the recruiting front, if you get Justin Taylor, a guy that's from Charlottesville, Virginia, which is where the University of Virginia plays, is located, that's a pretty signature recruiting win, because you went into another ACC's foe backyard, a school that has owned you the last 5 to 6 years on the court, and took away a premier prospect. And he made it known on his Twitter that he was not committing this weekend as well, as he plans to visit Syracuse, Virginia Tech, and, of course, Virginia later this month. But that's another heavy recruiting battle that Hubert Davis and this new staff is being involved in. And I think that's another thing that's came out of this weekend, is that, you know, there's a lot of questions about this staff, about how they're going to be able to coach. I don't think we question their ability to connect with kids and to try to get kids to buy into what the vision of Carolina basketball is and eventually come to Carolina. Now, granted, Now, if they swing and miss on these guys, we'll be on this podcast yet again having to talk the fan base off a ledge, because that's what happens when you miss five-star.
They can land them both, and we'll still have to probably talk about
and four-star prospects. But nonetheless, big recruiting month on tap for Carolina. They've got off to a great start with a commit, and then they've had two quality visits with two of their top prospects on their recruiting front. So anything on the recruiting front from you before we move on?
You look at Washington, and I mean, yeah, he's got the length. This is the type of guy that and they're looking at him to play pretty much that three spot, right? They're looking
stretch
at him
four is what ideally he wants.
Really?
To be.
Okay. I mean, I think he can help you on the wing. That's the main thing I see from him. I mean, he's got the ability to shoot it. He's pretty athletic. I like his size as well. He can help you on the interior defensively. And, with Taylor, I don't think people understand how big that would be, because I think that everybody still looks at Virginia and says, well, they're playing great basketball. They have been for a while. So they're probably – but they're probably still recruiting guys that really just fit their system. Not really. They've kind of strayed. I mean, granted, they still look for guys that I think want to buy in defensively and have that mindset of I do want to, play on the defensive end. But they're also a team that has not shied away from taking talent over the last couple of years. And now you've got a guy in your backyard that you would think, and again, you can never really take that mindset into recruiting. I doubt that Tony Bennett is taking the mindset into recruiting that he is going to, he's in the backyard and he should have no problem wrapping him up. But, when you have a guy that lives that close to campus, yeah, it is typical that you probably get a little comfortable in your own skin and think, okay, well, we should be able to lock this one up. But if Carolina could go in and land that commitment, I think that one would probably be the biggest statement out of all of them, because I know that he's not as highly rated as Washington. That would be humongous to go in and steal one away from Virginia without even playing a game on the court as a head coach. So we'll see. I think both of those situations are ones to monitor. I think Carolina's definitely got an opportunity there. Little more concerned about Deontay Green moving his visit back to August, which came after the Shavers commitment. Kind of makes you wonder if that was a big reason why he moved it back. I'm going to be honest with you. I've seen people that said they probably wouldn't take both guys. I don't know why you wouldn't.
I don't think they're in a position not to. You don't have front court stability after this season.
And the other thing is, there's a pretty significant talent gap immediately between those two guys. Like, look, I get it. You don't know what each guy could develop into. But when I look at Green, he's a guy that's probably a one-and-done, maybe a two-year guy. Like, I don't look at him and say, this guy's going to be here long-term. Where Shaver's going to be a guy that's going to have to come in and develop. He's going to be a guy that's probably going to fit the mold of, like, a Garrison Brooks, where he's going to take some time to build himself up. So you may need some of those more talented, immediately ready guys there, because again, this front court depth is thin. You can continue to try to build it through the transfer portal, which you're probably going to have to do, but I don't think that is the long-term solution. So you've got to find something else on this recruiting trail in the front court. I think you've got to take on at least one or two other guys.
I think so too. I understand this program is going to be more guard and perimeter oriented, but you've got to have front court depth if you're going to win, because you look at Baylor this year. That was a guard oriented team, but their front court and their front court depth was able to will them and help them win that national championship.
Well, the other thing is who out of this backcourt that is entering this season do we really think is going to leave after the year? Caleb Love?
I don't think there is any guy on this roster right now that's NBA ready.
But I would say
if there's one that would be, you would probably lean Caleb Love. But if Kerwin Walton shoots 47% from the 3-point line again and improves as a defender,
he's got to improve as a defender. That's the biggest thing.
If he turns himself into a legitimate 3-and-D guy, the NBA loves 3-and-D guys.
Right.
That's what the NBA wants from a guy like Kerwin Walton. So,
those are your two guys that you're looking at
as maybe leaving this backcourt. Other than that, you look like you're still in pretty good shape in that backcourt. So it's not an immediate need like the front court is. Your front court depth, we sat here for how many weeks and complained about the fact that at one point, me and you may have been suiting up to play front court for Hubert Davis. And now on the recruiting trail, you land one guy and people are like, well, you know, nobody else is going to want to join this front court because there's just no playing time available. What? How does that? No, that's not the case. I'm telling you, it's not.
I also think the change of philosophy where your front court players are basically just taller wing guys is enticing to load up on two or three of those guys. As long as they fit what you want to do, which are guys that can stretch the floor and make perimeter shots, you can never have too much shooting on your team.
Here's my thing. You got the roster spots. Take as many swings as you can to find the guys that fit. If they're there, go for it. If they want to come, take them.
And if he wants lessons on striking out, just check my dating recent or my dating profile recently, and you'll see how it is to swing and miss over and over again. But, you know,
going to say watch a Mets game and see Jacob DeGrom
but nonetheless, big month of recruiting. We've been stressing it on the blog or on the podcast. We're gonna have you covered with all the recruiting news and nuggets that come out of Carolina basketball as we get it. Before we transition into a new segment of the show, which will now be a part of the podcast moving forward, we got a message from DraftKings. I did mention that a part of me on the podcast network.
Here it is
from DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but also America's top-rated sportsbook as well. I love using DraftKings Sportsbook. It is easy to navigate, has plenty of instructors for new bettors, and nearly limitless ways to get in on all the action. My friends and family have been loving DraftKings Sportsbook, and I know you will too. Listen to this great offer. DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with a chance to turn $1 into $100 in site credits. That's right. Pick any basketball team that is in contention, bet $1, and if that team wins, you win $100 in site credits. No longer can we pick the New York Knicks. Their season has come to an end. Don't
pick the Hawks, please.
Yeah, don't forget DraftKings Sportsbook also offers great odds and promotions on baseball, hockey, and so much more all week long. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code TBPN, that's the Basketball Podcast Network, when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code TBPN. PN for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbooks for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. So there you go, guys. To DraftKings Sportsbook.
Great. What a number you had to read.
And get on and get
wait,
on
so is one. That is that only for basketball, the special code, or is it for baseball as well? This is a question that's probably outside of your realm here. I was just going to say, because I will definitely be betting –
Every time Jacob DeGrom pitches, or anytime we play the Diamondbacks.
I'm going with a safe bet for the NBA, we're posting this tonight, right, this podcast?
Depends what time we get out of here.
Okay, well, either way, I would probably say that the Nets might be safe. That might be the best one to put your credit towards at this point.
Imagine having this back in 2015-16 when Golden State went 73-9 and made it to a Game 7 of the NBA Finals.
Oh,
could have made a lot of money that year.
I wouldn't even have to do this podcast. Tell you what, I'd be living large. No, I'd still be doing this, man.
Yeah.
Not even going to lie.
All right. And as I mentioned before we got through the DraftKings read, there is a new part of the show that is debuting today.
Here we go.
For those of you that are lifelong Carolina basketball fans that grew up with Dean Smith, Bill Guthridge, Matt Doherty, Roy Williams, now Hubert Davis, there's been a theme about when they started practice, they always had the thought of the day, and that it was always posted early, and then normally a freshman or a player had to recite it at practice, and if they forgot the thought of the day, they usually had to run suicides or do something like that. And it was really a neat moment that, you know, Dean Smith started. It carried over, became a part of the Carolina basketball tradition. So I thought, well, you know, what better way to have a podcast thought of the day. We've thrown it back. We're now the Four Corners Podcast, as we were usually, as we were formerly the Royce Boys. So we'll tie this all back into the lineage of Carolina basketball. These will be basketball-themed thoughts that will come straight from either Dean Smith, Roy Williams. Sometimes we'll go to some other basketball people, but we're going to try to keep it with Carolina people, as this is a Carolina basketball podcast. So the very first pod thought of the day comes from Dean Smith, and it goes like this. Basketball is a team game, but that doesn't mean all five players should have the same amount of shots. Interestingly enough, that was my philosophy when I played, that there may be five guys on the court, but only about two or three of us, mainly myself, should be the one taking jump shots from behind the three-point line.
Oh, man.
That philosophy never really worked out.
Yeah, no wonder your team lost so many
games. We lost a lot of games, but that theory did allow me to score 30 points on one leg with a torn ACL in a regulated basketball – in a regulated church
game. You mean
gym.
In a regulated fictional church game. Sure. Okay.
But there you go, guys. The very first pod thought of the day. Now we'll move on. We got two more topics to cover before we get out of here. And I'm teased earlier that we had another legendary coach on Tobacco Road, and that was not Kevin Keats, has announced his decision to
retire.
You
said legendary, not legendary, not legendarily average.
Yeah, and that is Coach K. He announced his retirement last week on June 2nd. At the conclusion of this season, he will coach the 2021-22 season, and then he will go off into retirement at 74 years of age. This is, of course, following Roy Williams, who retired earlier this year back on April Fool's Day, when it turned out not to be an April Fool's joke. And this is, you know, you're probably sitting there thinking, well, how does Coach K retiring affect Carolina basketball? The same way when Roy Williams retired.
You can't, if you ask that question, I got told
by a guy on Twitter, and I'll keep his name anonymous just for really for his own pride.
Oh, man. Oh, no.
That this isn't a sad day for college basketball, not a sad day for the ACC, just a sad day if you are a Duke fan. And look,
what about the USA basketball influence that Coach K had? Okay. I mean, come on.
And look. We're all going to make our jokes about him having his retirement tour because we're Carolina fans. He's our rival, and he wants his retirement tour.
Can I say this? I don't have a problem with the tour. Didn't have a problem when they announced that. My problem with it was that they attempted to pass it off as, well, we just don't want to disrespect the recruits.
Yeah.
Because he felt bad about – come on. Get out of here. Just come out and say right out, he wants a retirement tour. Dude, you're easily the most achieved coach in college basketball history. You are probably outside, I don't know why my voice cracked, probably outside of Nick Saban, the most accomplished coach in the history, in sports history, especially recently. I mean, you could maybe make an argument that Bill Belichick's up there with him as well, Vince Lombardi, but this man is probably one of the top five greatest, most accomplished coaches of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, how are we going to sit here and say to ourselves, you know what? I don't think this guy, he doesn't deserve the tour. That was my thing. Have the tour. I wish Roy would have taken the tour.
Yeah.
But he didn't choose to go that route. But don't lie to me and try to tell me, well, it's about the recruits. Come on.
I mean, and you look at recent guys that have had their retirement tours. Derek Jeter had one his last year with the Yankees. Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon had it in NASCAR. Kobe Bryant had it his last year at the NBA. And you can see the impact that these people that – and I mean, like, you know, for us growing up, you know, I wasn't – you know – during Kobe's reign with the Lakers, I wasn't a Kobe Bryant fan, but when he was retiring, we'll actually have a chance to somewhat appreciate what Coach K has done. But for some people to think that this isn't important in terms of the ACC, and really when you look at this rivalry, you're really just lying to yourselves. The Duke-Carolina rivalry doesn't become what it is without Coach K. Before Coach K got to Durham, Duke was not Carolina's biggest rival. That was NC State.
Yep.
And if you don't believe that, look at the history book. You ask old Carolina fans. You can't ask Dean Smith today. You can't ask Woody Durham today. But you ask people that have been around those programs. NC State was the most hated. That was where the rivalry was at. Coach K elevated Duke in the image of what Dean Smith had built in Chapel Hill. And Thus, the greatest rivalry in sports really came to light, all because and this guy won 17 ACC tournaments, or yeah, 17 ACC tournaments. I mean, he's been to 12 Final Fours, most tied for most all time. He's won 5 national championships. Look, all that sucks because we've had to witness a lot of those ACC tournaments.
We wish he was less successful.
You know,
for
I've witnessed him win 2 national championships and all that, but the guy's earned it. And you know, you made a comment that if Carolina honors him when he comes to Chapel Hill, you're going to be sick. Carolina gave him a plaque after he won his 1,000th game when he came to the Smith Center for the first time after winning that 1,000th game. Carolina's going to honor him. And I think if you go back to the very first game after Dean Smith died and they had the pregame little huddle prayer, and that game was in Cameron, how neat that was. And granted, Coach K isn't dying, but the mutual respect between these two programs comes out in moments like these. I bet you when they go to Cameron or even when they come to Chapel Hill the first time, they will honor Roy Williams in some way. Because that's what these two teams do when it's time to appreciate what either have done. Now, when the ball tips and for 40 minutes we're going to go in each other's throat, I don't give a crap about his retirement tour. I don't give a crap about anything. I want to beat his butt. But beforehand, he's earned the right, and you know, and the Carolina will honor him. The thing is,
can I explain? So, give him a plaque, give him a rocking chair, give him a golf club, whatever the hell you want to give him. I don't really care.
I don't think he golfs.
Give him more hair dye. I don't really care what you give him. But do not honor this guy with like a video tribute. Don't have him stand at midcourt and everybody cheer. Oh, hell no. When he comes out to midcourt, you better boo. You better boo him. I get it, but we're not, dude, this is not supposed to be a guy that we're supposed to like and you know, cheer for, everything like that. I would expect the same thing for Roy. I mean, look, there's mutual respect, but at the same time, I mean, come on, you know, this is, you can't, I just hope that they go about it to where they show some respect, but at the same time, still show, hey, this is a rivalry.
Well, I think Hubert Davis did that because the day of his retirement, he didn't make a comment about his retirement. He made it till the next day. But it's like I told Duke fans, well, while your coach was retiring, our coach was busy landing his first recruit of his very first recruiting class as the newest head coach of the Tar Heels. That's a little bit more important at the time than your coach going off into retirement. But, you know, there's a lot of questions that come with the retirement of Coach K. Of course, it's 1 year after Roy Williams retires, and it affects the rivalry. We have transitioned from Dean Smith to Bill Guthridge, through Bill Guthridge to Matt Doherty, from Matt Doherty to then Roy Williams, now from Roy Williams to Hubert Davis. But Coach K has been the one constant in the rivalry. And look, there's been a lot of, I guess, media propaganda the last 5 or 6 years that this is no longer the best rivalry in college basketball. That's now become Kentucky and Louisville. My thing is, you look at both of these games, you look at, I mean, outside of when Carolina blew them out in Chapel Hill this year, you look at the game in Durham this past season, both teams unranked, both teams playing really for the NCAA tournament lives the first weekend of February, and they delivered one of the best games of the rivalry in recent memory. It's always been known as the rivalry that always delivers. There's nothing finer than Duke Carolina.
Isn't there one that's also played in the typically in the afternoon in the middle of football season? Yeah, I can't. Yeah, which one is that? Is that Carolina Duke who play twice, or is that Louisville and Kentucky which play once a year? There's no competition in the sport. This is right now, and who knows? With these two legendary coaches leaving, it may change. Right now, this is the best rivalry in all of sports. And I don't see any way, if you look at the statistics, you look at the history, you look at the hatred, that you can think otherwise. And we've seen it here. Now, some people might not see it around the country. This is an all-year conversation. Like, you may think, oh, well, in the summertime, you guys probably don't really talk that much about it. No, if you come across a Duke fan, you will have debates with that person. It's just, it's how it works. There's bad blood throughout the entire year. So, I mean, that's the thing that I think people have to realize, is that right now, this is the rivalry that is king in all of sports. Because, like we've seen, I mean, look, Maybe the Yankees and Red Sox will start to get back to that point because now both teams are good. But there's no telling that both teams are going to stay good because, as we've seen recently, the Red Sox are pretty much hit and miss every year. What's your biggest rivalry in the NFL right now? Like, are you going with a classic Green Bay and Chicago? I don't think so. Green Bay's dominated them. I mean, if you're looking for new age rivalries, typically they're just quarterback versus quarterback more than team versus team. And then, I mean, if you're looking throughout the rest of college sports, I mean, the closest might be the Iron Bowl, which has overtaken the game in college football as the greatest rivalry in recent years. So in my mind, there's no question that right now this is the best rivalry in all of sports.
I always go back to this. Name another rivalry where you're going to find two teams located within less than 10 miles each from each other that have two different belief systems about how you should do things. We do it the right way. Duke does it the douche way. But they both yet compete for national championships. There's no other rivalry that has all of that. Then you factor in the great players, the great coaches, the great games that have gone on for 60 years. We've got about 35 years of TV great games, but they've been playing great games since the 1960s. No other rivalry can match what Duke Carolina has. And, you know, Coach K has a statement. I've read a book by Art Chansky called Blue Blood, and it details the rivalry from the time it began back all the way in the early 1900s to at the point 2005. And it was pretty much proposed that, look, the rivalry, like, you know, everyone, when Roy got hired, it was what happened, believed to be true. Those ties were going to, you know, this rivalry was going to ride those two guys out. That's happened. Roy's retired, and now Coach K is about to retire. And Coach K long said that this isn't Roy versus Coach K. It's not Dean versus Coach K or Dean versus Vic Bobas or whoever. Duke and Carolina will be here forever. And Hubert Davis and now John Shire will be the guys that are now the caretakers of this great rivalry. And, I mean, I think we both know where we're going to land because I have a question on here, which is which program is best suited to compete moving forward? We're Carolina guys. We're going to say Carolina. But, I mean, I think there are factors that lead into that.
Yeah. No,
UNC
no,
has no. History going through this. Duke hasn't had to transition from one great coach to another. Vic Bovis and Bill Foster were good coaches. They weren't the greatest coach of all time. They didn't go to 12 Final Fours or win 5 national championships, where Carolina went from Dean Smith, who at the time when he retired was the best coach in the history of college basketball, to then Bill Guthridge, and then you had the down years with Matt Doherty. He had 18 great years with Roy Williams, so they know what to expect because this is a transition period. Duke has not done this before, and they're doing the same thing they did when they hired Coach K with John Shire, which is taking a chance on an unproven head coach.
Well, I mean, look, you know, he had coached at Army before, so, I mean, this is
– with a losing record.
Right, but this is a guy that has no head coaching experience, and as of right now, they're searching for their guy on the bench that is basically going to be what Jeff Lebo is to – Hubert Davis right now. They don't have anybody on their staff that has head coaching experience. So it's very interesting because both of these teams are basically in the same exact spot. One team is going to be a year behind the other, though. So, I mean, how much does that factor in? Does that help Hubert Davis get an advantage early on the recruiting trail? Does that help Hubert Davis get an advantage, you know, in the rivalry when they first start meeting each other head-to-head as head coaches? Because remember, this year, Coach K is still going to be there. So it will be Hubert versus Coach K for the first two games of Hubert Davis's Carolina coaching career. After that, it will then shift to him and John Shire. I mean, look, you know, I'll give him this. I mean, John Shire is a hell of a recruiter. Like, if you know some of the recruits that he's been a big part of landing these last couple years, you know that they're still probably going to recruit on a pretty high level. But you make a great point, and that is that when you look at the history of Duke basketball, I mean, let's be honest. Like, you look at Carolina basketball, even before Dean Smith got there, most people would say after Dean Smith left, Carolina basketball is Dean Smith. That's a great argument. At the same time, you did win a national championship with Frank McGuire there. So there was some success, even more success than Duke had before Coach K got there when Dean Smith arrived in Chapel Hill and took over for Frank McGuire. So you're right. This is, I mean, Coach K is Duke. It's really that simple. Without him, that program, who knows where that program is? That program could be somewhere similar to where NC State is right now. You just don't know. So they've got to make that transition. Jay Billis said it the other day on his social media feed after Coach K retired. This is the hardest job in college basketball to follow, maybe in all of sports to follow.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to agree. I mean, it's going to be tough. And this is the thing that if you look, and this is for both programs going forward with the two guys that they have in place now, I think they're the right hires. And especially if, you know, what we just talked about with the rivalry is going to stay as fierce as it is and as competitive as it is, you feel like two guys that played and lived in the rivalry and have done so even from the bench as assistant coaches for the last few years, they are the perfect guys to take over these spots. But see, this is the difference. When we talk about the situation when Dean Smith left, yeah, you went to Bill Guthridge. You know, you knew that was a bridge guy. Honestly, it probably wasn't the best move back then. You probably should have looked for your next full-time head coach. Then, if you know, you of course hadn't landed Roy Williams, that it could have turned out to be pretty bad. Matt Doherty, you know, wasn't great. They ended up smoothing it over with Roy Williams, the guy that was always kind of there. They always had that card in their back pocket that they could keep going to. And they, in their mind, I think they knew eventually Roy was going to come there. And he had the proven track record. He was a great head coach. Right now, if you look inside of the Carolina family and you look inside of the Duke family, which it seems like they're pretty hell-bent on staying inside of those families.
Which I got to commend them for doing that because
right.
We make fun of the brotherhood, which is what they call their little thing over
there.
Well,
they tried passing it off as a family the other day, and I was yeah, slow your roll there, Kay.
And, you know, I always thought when this job became open, it was going to be open to anybody.
Yeah, they pretty much from – what I saw, they pretty much immediately shot that thought down.
Yeah.
They were like, that's not happening. Kay was – and pretty much this was a very similar situation to what happened with Dean Smith, where Kay was basically given he was told, pick who you want, and we're agreeing right on the spot.
And there aren't many coaches that reach that pinnacle where you should have a say in who takes over. Dean Smith was one. Roy Williams is one. Coach K is one. And you're looking around the country, probably Bill Self because he has a lifetime contract at Kansas.
Jim Boeheim will sign it with a booger.
Then,
on his,
then Jim
on
Boeheim.
His
and then depending on probably Coach Calipari at Kentucky.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not guaranteed. Look at Jim Calhoun. He didn't sign off on Kevin Ollie coming in to take over after him. And I mean, look, now Kevin Ollie won him a championship, and you can decide whether or not you thought Kevin Ollie deserved that title if he was a good coach and things just went wrong. It's whatever.
But it's
not guaranteed that you get to pick. Like, that shows you how special some of these guys are. And I think it also shows that at these two schools in particular, it is also much different because there's no saying that Calipari is going to get a chance to pick his name. I mean, look at Adolph Rupp was an extremely successful head coach there too as well. And did he pick the guy that replaced him? I don't know. So that's the thing. You're talking about two legendary guys that had big says. And I mean, you know, Roy Williams, I think, you know, I don't know if it was on the level as K. I'm pretty sure Coach K walked in and said, look, it's John Shire. And within 5 seconds, they said, yep, it's John. We're signing it. With Roy, it may have been, okay, Bubba said, okay, well, what's the reasoning why you want to pick him? Something like that. But I still think that it is pretty crazy how both of these guys have that much influence. And we'll see. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting because I also think that it's going to be much different how these guys are going to handle the programs that they once coached in retirement. I think Roy is, from what we've heard, is going to be hands-off. Roy's going to be like, look, Hubert, if you need me, call me. I'll come to games, but I'm not going to be here all day, every day, watching over you. Coach K seems more very similar to what Dean Smith did, where he's going to watch over the program. He's going to make sure that things are running the right way, and he is going to be a guy that I think maybe Shire can sort of establish some of his own, you know, coaching entities within the program. But I think a lot of it, Coach K is going to be looking over his shoulder, telling him this is how things are done, and we'll see how it works.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's going to be very interesting, but I do think, as you mentioned, for the rivalry's sake and for both schools' sake, they got right now the right guy. But, and I've said all year long, and it, or all season long, as good as we feel about Hubert Davis on June 7th, all that goes out the window if he doesn't win. And I think that's even more at Duke. If John Shire doesn't win, they're not just going to be like, well, this is who Coach K picked. Coach K will go, look, you're not getting it done. And he'll breathe. If he wants to keep it within his brotherhood, he'll bring in Tommy Amaker, or maybe he brings back Capel, even though he can't run a program at Pittsburgh. So what makes you think he can do it at Duke?
That's the thing. There's just not these once-in-a-generational guys. Like at Carolina, you're maybe holding your breath. That, I mean, of course, like, look, both programs are hoping that the guys they picked are going to work out and be successful.
Carolina has a safety net because Wes Miller will always come back.
Wes Miller is your guy. But I think this is the other thing, is you have to wonder what the pressure will be like at both of these schools. And this is what concerns me a little bit. I think it would be more at Duke than at Carolina. If they don't succeed under Shire, they will go national. Or they will, if they don't go national, I'm going to tell you, they're going to look at where Quinn Snyder is in his career with the Utah Jazz. And if they feel like he might be in a spot where he's reached his potential, they could be on the downturn there, which is possible. I mean, look, that team could be heading towards a finals appearance this year coming out of the West. That's a legitimately good basketball team out there in Utah. They may look at him and say, is this the guy that we want to take over? Can we give him an offer that he can't refuse?
Yeah.
Straight out of The Godfather or something here. But, I mean, but is Carolina going to be willing to do that? I don't know. That's the thing.
I've always maintained that I would hope not, because not many coaching trees have the type of guys that Carolina has that have ties to Carolina basketball. The lineage, the excellence that you can still go and get from many different places, no other school in college basketball has, which is why it, again, is it's why the Carolina family is superior in more ways than just what they did on the basketball court. One last thing before we got here. It's been a jam-packed show since we got back behind the headset.
They thought we entered the transfer portal, but apparently we took our names out and we're back.
So. The same day, and this is one of the things that makes the rivalry unique, and it's one of the reasons why, you know, we just love it. The same day that Coach K announced his eventual retirement, which is June 2nd, the town of Chapel Hill announced that every June 2nd moving forward will be deemed Roy Williams Day.
Here we go.
And I thought that was just fantastic.
That's awesome.
Because there's no way before that news got announced by his retirement about 10, 11 o'clock a.m. that morning, that when that day started, they were like going to meet at the little town hall and say, look, we're making today Roy Williams Day. That was simply a slap in the face to Coach K's retirement. And it's one of those things that just makes the rivalry what it is, because they're really close and it's going to piss all the people off in Durham. And you see some of the Duke people on social media getting all out of ire and all that. So, job well done. The best part about that was then they later asked Roy Williams after he got done. He was golfing somewhere that day. They asked Roy about what advice he would give Coach K about entering retirement. And as only Roy Williams could say, well, I've been retired about 2 months. I don't have the ability to give anyone advice after just 2 months of retirement.
That may have been one of the greatest clips that I've ever seen in my life. Because first of all,
I was just laughing.
There was a huddle. There were like four or five reporters.
They
like,
tracked
they
this man
tracked
down.
This dude down on the course. He is like, I'm telling you, he's like 500 feet from 18 green. He had just finished his round, and immediately, I mean, you don't even get this type of coverage on the PGA Tour. Like,
unless
dude,
you're Phil Mickelson.
Dude, Phil's got to go sign his card and everything like that before he can get the Wanamaker. Roy can't even sign the card yet. He can't even take a breath. He can't even crack a beer. He's got to walk straight off, and they have everybody there asking him questions. He gave a weather report in the middle of the interview as well. I mean, this was just a gem. You thought, man, Roy's retiring. We're not going to get these great interviews. Dude, I'm going to need at least once a month a Roy off-the-course interview.
Yeah.
I mean, we need something, because that was phenomenal. Also, just class. I don't know why. I thought him calling him Michael was hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard anybody call Coach K I've heard him call him Mike. Never have I heard a Michael dropped in there. That was hilarious. Personally, you know, June 2nd, I think that's hilarious that they did it to show up Coach K. That's awesome. Man's a rat, all that. But personally, I wish it would have been August 1st.
Yeah.
His birthday, I think that would make a lot of sense. But I get the move. Hey, because I'm going to be honest with you. When I saw that come across the screen, because I was in the radio studio just about to head out when it came across the screen that he was planning on retiring, I said to myself, you got to be kidding me. I'm trying to phrase. I said something that I can't. This rat beepstered is trying to show up Roy. He can't let Roy have one. He could, but you know what? Chapel Hill responded. Great job by them. I think it's fantastic. I just wonder what kind of parties we're going to be getting into on June 2nd. We're going to be the only people in Chapel Hill, by the way, celebrating this. On that day, we'll be the guys, and he's not here with nobody else in the place.
I'll just take the Roy Williams bobblehead I have at home, take him in there, and he'll just bob his head while we sit there and drink.
Would you like another? Yes.
Yeah, we're drinking beers and taking shots. Well,
there you go.
That's going to wrap up a very eventful edition of the podcast. We plan on being back. Well, I will be back with you guys on a weekly basis. I don't know if Anthony will be back with every week. As part of the going on the network, is I got to do an episode every weekly or on a weekly basis. This is the time of the year though where trying to get interviews and guests with former players, going to be busy doing that the next couple of days. But you know, as we always close it down, I want to get you guys with the website, HeelToughBlog.com, where we have you covered with all the recruiting news that'll come on the basketball front. I got an article up there today recapping this last weekend's recruiting action and the football front as well, as Shubert Davis is hosting recruits, as is Mack Brown, the football side of things. And shortly before you know it, we'll be getting you guys ready for what we hope will be a fun 2021 football season for Carolina football.
Dude, Sam is literally lounging by the pool doing interviews out of a lounge chair. This dude is ready.
Yeah.
It's going to be a year.
So, you know, get over to the website, HeelToughBlog.com, for all your great football and basketball coverage. If you want to write about, if you guys want baseball coverage, we'll be glad to give it to you. If we can find someone to write about the Diamond Heels, their season came to an end in Lubbock yesterday. So if anybody wants a writing opportunity, you love Carolina baseball, reach out to Anthony, reach out to myself on Facebook or Twitter, and we will talk to you guys about getting you set up with a chance to write about Carolina baseball. Lastly, we want to encourage you guys to rate, review, but ultimately subscribe to the podcast. Also, with this move onto the Basketball Podcast Network, the podcast has moved from Spreaker now over to the Megaphone app, but we're still on every major podcasting platform, you know, so Spreaker, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn, Google Podcasts.
Well, no, you're no longer on Spreaker.
No, it's still on there. I just changed my hosting site.
Oh, there you go. It still is on there.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
So give us, you know, like us, review my job as the host, review Anthony's job as the co-host. We want you guys to subscribe. That way you get every podcast right there in your podcast library. Well, with that, I do thank Anthony for taking some time to come on and talk a little Carolina basketball. We want to thank you guys for listening. And as always, go Tar Heels.